Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler Podcast, Episode 45.
Welcome to the Amateur Traveler Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Today on the show, we're going to talk about digital photography and travel photography in general with Chris Marquardt from the popular podcast, Tips from the Top Floor. This episode is brought to you by Hotelbook.com, the official site of independent hotels worldwide. Hotelbook.com. Stay your way. Stay independent. I have two news stories for you today. The first one comes from USA Today's travel section. They took a non-scientific survey of what people are looking for in airport amenities. And while I wouldn't say that I would tend to agree with manicures as being number one, which is what came out in the survey, I certainly would relate to lots of plentiful electrical outlets. Anybody who's traveled with a laptop has run into that before, or the issue of the need for peace and quiet. So check out that story in the show notes. The next story comes from WiredNews.com. The airlines are spending a lot of money to try and figure out faster ways to board planes. The faster you can get passengers on or off a plane, potentially the more number of flights a single plane can do in a single day. And that's very important to the cash-strapped airlines. So if the next time you board a plane, you're asked to board in an inverted pyramid, that is, the back and the windows before the front and the aisles, or you're asked to board five seats in the back and then five in the front and then five more towards the back and then five in the front, it's because scientists have been trying to study exactly what is the fastest configuration. Episode 13 was called Travel Photography 101, which was my take on travel photography. I wanted to get back to it because I know quite a few of you are photographers, so this time I've invited on a host of Tips from the Top Floor, Chris Marquardt, which is a travel photography, or rather a photography podcast that I listen to. So here's the interview I have with Chris. I'd like to introduce on the show Chris Marquardt, who is a podcaster also from Tips from the Top Floor, and his is a podcast that I listen to every week, a couple times a week usually, and Chris does a podcast on digital photography, so I've asked him to come on and talk about travel photography and digital travel photography in particular. So, Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, Chris, how are you doing? Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for coming on here. It's fun talking to podcasters who I've listened to for some time. It seems very familiar because the voice is so familiar. So clearly you have a lot of different tips that we could offer people in terms of photography because you do a whole show on it and have done over 100 episodes now. And so if we had to boil it down to, if you had your top five tips for better travel photography, what would you recommend to people?
Well, in general, I think all the tips for regular photography also apply when you travel. And there's just some really basic things. Let's look at things like image composition. If you take a picture of something, and it's, I think in travel photography, landscape photography is pretty common, try to take things off-center, like the horizon, for example. If you move that a bit further up or down in the picture and include more of the sky or of the ground, that can make a big difference.
Now, are you a subscriber then to the rule of thirds?
Not necessarily. I mean, that's kind of the rule of thirds, just to explain it briefly. Basically, You split the image into three areas horizontally and into three areas vertically, and then where those split lines cross, that's what the rule of thirds says, to put the subject of the image onto one of those intersections. But even though it's called the rule of thirds, it's kind of a last way out. If I really have no good idea about how to compose that picture, I'll sometimes fall back to that rule. But again, the name rule just is misleading. It's not a rule. It's maybe a guideline that can help you if you start doing composition, and sometimes it works really well. So yeah, if it's a rule, then please learn to bend it. I think that's the important thing.
So composition. Your first one is,
yeah, composition in general is important. Don't just aim the camera at someone and snap the picture. If you want to take a portrait of someone, try moving people a bit off center. Maybe even try cut something off. And another thing is get closer to things. It's really hard to compose a good overview shot because those sometimes tend to become pretty cluttered, lots of things in them that compete for your attention when you look at the picture. And sometimes it really pays off to move in closer, not necessarily zoom in, but use your feet as a zoom replacement, basically. Walk closer and pick out a detail. That can really make a big difference.
Do you have any good examples of when you framed a picture one way, you know, especially in travel photography, and then you got closer or you framed it differently and you were so much happier with how the picture turned out?
Oh, I spent some time a couple of weeks ago in London and was at Kew Gardens there, and there was this big greenhouse that had, what was it, water lilies in and things, and I tried to capture the whole thing and it, yeah, it was a nice picture, sort of, but it didn't really work out. And then I went really close and got really close to some of those water lilies and had them in just partially and then some reflections in the background, and this detail really made a big difference. You can, of course, if you do a slideshow or something later on, include those overview shots, but those details really get you closer into the whole thing and kind of draw you in much more.
You say include those pictures. I sometimes feel like when I'm traveling, I'm taking snapshots, and I sometimes feel like I'm taking photographs.
Yeah, it's the same with me.
I have these, you know, this is a record of where I was, so I'll remember it. But then this is something that I've composed, and I really like the way this turned out.
Yeah, and I think that's perfectly okay. Not all the photography I do is kind of is art photography. I do a lot of snapshots myself, and then. I still do a good portion of selecting the ones that I want to show to other people and the ones that I don't. And with digital photography nowadays, photography is really cheap. I mean, you can take as many pictures as you want and just weed them out later. A good tip for travel photography, I think, in this respect is if you run out of memory cards, if you just took too many pictures, you can usually go to a photo store and get your pictures burnt on a CD, and this way free up memory on the camera.
While you're still on your, if you didn't take a computer with you to download them.
Which is definitely another option. There are also other things like, I think they're called image tanks, small hard disk, portable hard disks that have a card slot that you can slide the card in, press a copy button, and it just copies the whole thing to a hard disk, and then you can free up the memory card this way too.
Yeah, in fact, I just purchased the iPods attachment so that I could take things off of my camera. I haven't had a chance to use that out in the field yet, but just in case.
Yeah,
I did
run out. I did use one of those devices. I'm now a bit more careful because I recently had a hard disk crash, not on this device, but somewhere else. So a hard disk is a moving thing, and if you travel and you have that in your backpack and you throw that in a corner, there's
Absolutely.
Quite some G-force on those hard disks that can damage them. I mean, in general, you have to be careful with hard disks. So I wouldn't necessarily fully rely on this now, especially if I'm a professional photographer, so I would be on a job, and if that was the only backup I had. So I personally went for more memory cards. just more flashcards. Mm-hmm. If one is full, I use the next one. Now on a long trip, maybe having your pictures burned to a CD is a good option.
Okay. So composition, getting things off your cards onto CDs. What other ideas do you have for travel photographers?
Well, a very general one. If you travel abroad and they have different power plugs, make sure you have the proper adapter with you. Happened to me once, and it was a bit of a pain to find the right adapter. And running out of battery is not a nice thing if you're on a trip.
That, I usually find that to be more of a problem than running out of card space.
Right. Power, yeah. It really depends on what kind of camera you have. I use a digital SLR, right, which is pretty good when it comes to power consumption. I can go 400, 500, 600 pictures without a flash on one battery, but mm-hmm. still... better be on the safe side and have a charger with you and the proper power plug. Other thing generally about one type of picture that usually happens a lot on trips is that you take a picture of a person in front of a landmark.
Sure.
And what I've often seen and what I don't really personally like is if you have this, let's say the Eiffel Tower. You have the Eiffel Tower and then this tiny little speck standing in front of it and saying, that's Julia. But, of course, you can't really see that person if it's printed on a small size or on a smaller screen. And so if you take a picture of a person in front of a landmark, get them closer to the camera. Just have them come closer so that they, are kind of bigger in relation to the actual landmark. That really helps a lot.
Now, at that point, that's something that if you're using a point and shoot or if you're not comfortable with depth of field, you're going to have a little more trouble potentially getting the landmark in also, though.
Well, with the point and shoot, you won't have that much of a problem. The big difference between a point and shoot and a digital SLR is the depth of field. So with a point and shoot, there's usually more of your picture in focus than with a digital SLR. The SLRs just have a more shallow depth of field, depending on the lens and focal length and lots of things to it. But in general, you can really say point and shoot, everything is in focus, starting from, let's say, 3-4 feet away, as opposed to a digital SLR where you have to do a much better job in focusing and selecting which part of the image you want to have in focus. So having a person close to you and the Eiffel Tower in the background might be a bit tougher there, but depending on the light conditions, you can get that pretty well.
And I should pause for the listeners who are taking pictures but don't feel like they're comfortable photography. Depth of field is just how much of the background is in focus, and if you want a lot of detailed explanation on that, I would recommend Chris's podcast because he'll go into details on those sorts of terms.
Yeah, I tend
but,
to get
definitely something.
Sorry.
So go ahead.
I just want to say I tend to get quite technical about things sometimes. I just sometimes I have to tone that down a bit.
I think you do a nice balance there.
Hopefully.
But there are times that it's helpful to know how to either get rid of the background because you're trying to, if there's too much noise, or include the background because you are trying to get that landmark, for instance, in there. Any other general tips?
A very general one, again, is change your perspective. Most of the shots I see, or many travel shots I see, are taken just from eye height. The photographer is standing, taking picture from their eye height, and that usually results in pictures the way that we see. We see them all the time from eye height. It's nothing unusual, so it doesn't really make the image look interesting. So if you, for example, kneel down to take a picture, sit on the ground, sometimes even lie flat on your belly, or climb up onto something, just change the perspective. Just imagine that shot again of the Eiffel Tower with someone in front. If you do that from slightly below, you can have this nice little effect that you have the person and the Eiffel Tower being the same size on the picture, which is really interesting looking then.
I sent Chris a list of questions before the show, as I sometimes do to sort of prep people. One of the questions I sent you was the best story about when you were glad you'd packed a camera.
Let me see. This one is not necessarily travel related, but one night when I returned home, there was a thunderstorm building up on the horizon, and it turned out to be one of those once in 10 years opportunities. It was really, if you know the weather in Germany, usually a thunderstorm means lots of rain, and then you have to close the windows and it's hard to take pictures. But that was really absolutely stunning lightning without a single drop of rain. And in addition to being really happy that I had my camera at hand, I was even more happy to have a small MP3 recorder with me that I then used to capture that whole event with. And, of course, that also made it into a show on my podcast then.
Right, I remember listening to that. You know, I realized one of your tips that you mentioned in the show that you didn't give for travel photography is alternatives to tripods.
Right. Oh, thanks for reminding me. Yeah. I'm not a big fan of tripods. I own a tripod. I use it when I do studio photography and these kind of things. I sometimes have it with me, but usually I don't because it's just too bulky to carry around. And that might be even more true if you travel with a backpack or something. So what I use is a beanbag. And that's basically, yeah, a bag. Let's say, what would that be in size? 20 centimeters, 7 inches in diameter, filled with, yeah, beans, rice, anything like that. And you can easily make that yourself. Now, the way it works is that you use it to replace a tripod. You put it onto basically any sort of surface as long as it's not really wet, and sit the camera on top of that beanbag, and that's really going to help stabilize it. It's also very good for self-portraits if you travel alone. Perfect. And it'll give your camera a lot more stability than if you just sit it on a rock or something. Put that beanbag on the rock, put that camera on top of it, or the top of a fence, or any surface basically, and that really, that's not, on the one hand, not as bulky, and on the other hand, I find it very, very flexible. I use it fairly often.
Now, if you put it on the top of the fence, you would want to make sure that's not an electric fence, right?
Reminds me, yeah. That's another thing, a bit travel-related again. Yeah, be careful if you take a picture where you walk. What was that? I think it was on my show number 40, where I did landscape photography and was rudely interrupted by cows that kept mooing, and I was doing a recording and it was basically had to switch that whole show over to cow photography, and then I ended up running into the electric fence because I was looking through the viewfinder, was not looking where it was going.
I think that's not a bad tip for landscape photography, is be mindful of your surroundings in the real world and what's going on, not just what's going on through your viewfinder.
Well, if you are traveling to Ireland and you visit the cliffs of Moher, you should definitely be careful where you walk.
So the saddest story of when you wished you'd packed a camera.
Well, in general, I'm a bit sad whenever I miss a photo opportunity. Now, I've basically given up on being sad about missed photo opportunities, because otherwise I'd have to be sad every time I don't have my camera with me. It's really like that. I usually see photo opportunities all the time, and if I made all those into pictures, I probably wouldn't have any time left for my other hobbies. So, that's basically the general feeling. Look at that beautiful sky. That's a landscape. The light is so perfect right now, and I don't have a camera with me. But yeah, it's not worth being sad about that, because I'd have to be sad too often.
Now, how did you learn to look at something and see where the photo opportunity is?
That comes with time.
Or how would someone else learn that?
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's really important to go out and shoot. You can read about it as much as you want. It's good to read about it. It's good to listen to others about it. But then in the end, you only learn by doing it yourself. And again, with digital, you have an unlimited supply of film with you. So you can try, you can review pictures on the camera's display. And just look what works for you. But again, just the general composition things will already help you get your pictures a bit more interesting, change perspective, moving closer. Yeah, maybe even start off with a rule of thirds and then work your way from there. So
now, besides your podcast, any good resources for someone to improve their photography? A particular book or course or online website, or how would you recommend that people get better at it?
There are,
especially when we're doing travel photography, we've gone halfway around the world and we really want to get it right.
That's true. Well, in general, there are many resources out there. There are other photography podcasts as well, and there's good books. One of the things that, well, I'm not a book learner. So yes, I've read photo magazines, I've read books, but I started doing that long after I started doing photography. So I used those basically to confirm that I wasn't way off track. So in general, and by the way, if you go to my podcast website, in addition to the actual podcast, there's also a pretty active forum, and I learned a few things on forums as well. So you can talk to other photographers there, exchange ideas about composition, about post-processing of your images, about even equipment and these kind of things. Even though I'm not a big fan of equipment discussions, what I usually say, it's the photographer that takes the picture. It's not the camera.
Biggest surprises while traveling with your camera, besides the electric lens.
Well, that's a good question. Biggest surprises. If you go travel, I think you should make sure to know your camera, your lenses, your whole equipment that you take with you, and don't buy things just a few days before you travel. It happened to me that I was on a trip and I had bought a new lens just shortly before, and I didn't know the lens too well, and what I should have known is that this lens didn't really perform well with a wide open aperture. Now, all the digital SLR users out there will probably know what I'm talking about. For point-and-shoot users, that's not that important. But in general, yeah, make sure to know your equipment before you travel. I had a bit of a surprise when I came back, and I just found that many of those pictures didn't turn out as I wanted them to. And I couldn't see those details that were important for me then on the display of the camera. I really had to go to get home and get those onto my computer.
Okay. Five favorite places you've been with your camera. Places that you love to go to shoot.
That's an extremely tough question for me, because I usually everywhere I am I find something interesting. And let me see, where was I with the camera? In the United States, I really liked Oregon, Crater Lake.
Okay,
that was a beautiful place to take pictures. Even though I wished I had a wider angle lens with me, because just want to capture that whole width of the panorama. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have a good wide angle with you, that's a bit difficult. You can still take several pictures and later on use some panorama software to stitch them together into a panorama, but capturing that thing in one go is kind of more fun. Five places. Second, well, definitely the Black Forest. I mean, I live near the Black Forest, and it's really beautiful. It's got beautiful landscape here, nice cows, and good opportunities for photography in general.
We didn't actually mention that you are podcasting from Germany.
Yes, I am. I live
from southern Germany.
I live in Tübingen, in southern Germany, which is a nice old town. I love, that's probably the third place. I love to go to town. There's an old castle on top of one of the hills, and there's great opportunities around that as well. Well, four and five, I think, just in general, where I am, that's what I like. I really developed that that feeling for, well, that's kind of difficult to phrase that, but I think wherever I am, that's what I want to say, wherever I am, I usually find photo opportunities.
Those are the questions I have for you. Chris, you got any great answers left over?
No.
I didn't ask the right questions?
You did. Oh, that was a fun interview. Any last tips? No, in general, again, I can just repeat that. Do take pictures. If you have that camera, use it. Go out, shoot pictures. Even if you're not traveling, familiarize yourself with your camera and what it can do and what it can't do. That's probably even more important, so you don't run into any traps on your travel.
Thank you very much for being on the show, Chris. I appreciate your time.
You're welcome.
So I'm glad that Chris came on the show. I'm also glad he talked me into recording this as a double-ender podcast. That is to say, I recorded my side on my computer, and he recorded his side on his computer, and he then sent me his recordings, and I put it together. I was a little nervous, because until I had both parts, I had only half the conversation, so that worked out well, and I appreciated Chris suggesting that. For those of you who are thinking a little more about photography, to inspire you, I'll put up about half a dozen different photography sites that I've run across. Either I've run across the photographer at street fairs, or I've run into their work on the internet, and they happen to have landscape photography that I particularly enjoyed. So use that for your inspiration. I'll put links to that at amateurtraveler.com. I got an email from a listener, Pat, this week, who pointed out a problem that I had not seen. For those of you who were trying to get the Paris podcast from a few episodes ago, apparently, after the first 600 or so people downloaded it, it disappeared from the website. I think it had to do with some maintenance we were doing at Live World, which is where I host it, which is my daytime employer. And thanks again for providing that bandwidth to my boss, Peter. But I think we were doing some changing of equipment in the process. I lost that one particular episode. So if you had trouble getting the Paris episode, I've put that back up on the site, and go ahead and pick that up if you're interested in hearing that episode. I had some nice comments on the Argentina episode. One letter I got was from Alejandro, who is from Argentina, who enjoyed the episode, but was also asking for a favor. He's looking for more information about Chicago. He's a young doctor who travels around the world for meetings and is going to a meeting in Chicago next month, and also comes there relatively frequently, it sounds like. And he's wanting me to cover it in a future podcast. I'm going to need some help. I have been to Chicago once, so I'm wondering if some of the listeners who know Chicago better might offer me their services. So I'd like to do a series of podcasts on some more domestic locations. We've been getting to some far-flung corners of the world, and I'd like to come back to some U.S. destinations as well before my trip to Africa, which is coming up in July. Speaking of Africa, let me tell you a little more about what's coming up here. So, in 5 weeks, a little less than 5 weeks, I am leaving for Tanzania, and I'll be there for 2 weeks. It is a little unusual trip. We are doing a couple days of game safari, but then the rest of the trip is not your typical tourist trip. I'll be spending some time at a seminary in Tanzania in Arusha. I'll also be out at a church at the base of Kilimanjaro that is caring for orphans of AIDS. And in case you're unaware, in Africa, I believe the latest number I've seen is there are 25 million orphans that have been orphaned because of the disease AIDS that is ravaging through the continent. And so we're planning to go and see what we can do to help out a church that is caring for. When we first started talking to them, it was 70, and that was a couple months ago, and now it's 120 orphans. And so I have been asked if there was some way that people could contribute towards this. We are doing a project to try and raise some money for the pastor of that church, Pastor God Bless Mumkwe, to purchase a motorcycle or a small car, because he's caring for a couple different congregations there. If that's something you're interested in,
I'll put an address on the show notes of my church. It's a church group that we're going with. It is a tax-deductible donation. And then any money you donated would go to that. If you wanted to help fund my trip, that'd be great too, but I'm not really looking for that. And I'll assume that anything that did come in would be good towards that that project, at least unless you had instructions otherwise. So anyway, I did want to bring that up again, especially because we've had some new listeners and I've had some questions about that trip. But it should be a real interesting trip. I'm looking forward to it, probably also a little apprehensive. At the same time, it'll take me certainly out of my comfort zone, but that should be an interesting experience. So that's all I have for Amateur Traveler this time. Thanks for listening. This episode was brought to you by Hotelbook.com, which features nearly 5,000 unique and independent hotels in more than 140 countries. Whether it's a resort, a cabana, or a castle, Hotelbook.com invites you to stay your way and stay independent. Visit Hotelbook.com to see the latest destination with rates from $60 a night. From an upscale city hotel to a relaxing beach retreat, Hotelbook.com will show you the best deals for that one-of-a-kind travel experience. Hotelbook.com. Stay independent.
The best and the brightest, served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Podshow and Limelight.